Welcome to What's Next, the podcast that delves into the exhilarating world of nonlinear careers and the art of successful pivots. Join your host, Tamira Lechner, as she explores the diverse pathways of entrepreneurial spirits who thrive while working and playing across multiple disciplines. Whether you're firmly established in your career, contemplating a change, or simply seeking inspiration, these conversations with fascinating people will ignite your curiosity and inform your own journey. Tune in to discover how mindset and action plus your own secret sauce can lead to extraordinary personal and professional growth, no matter where life takes you.
Welcome to What's Next, a podcast that delves into the exhilarating world of non-linear careers and the art of successful pivots. I'm your host, Tamira Lechner, and this week, my guest is Vimala Thangavlu. Vimala and I first met when she was actually being coached by me as a peak performance client. And now she is a coach herself, which is so cool. And she's coaching traditionally underrepresented women as just part of her very cool career, where she's also an executive coach, corporate counsel, and a qualified company secretary. So welcome, Vimala.
Thank you so much, Tamara. Just for the record, I'm Vimala Thangavelu, and I'm so excited to be here. I have admire Tamara's work, Tamara, and I'm a fan of the What Next podcast. So really excited to be here.
Well, thank you. And thank you, Vimala. It is so important. Hint for our audience, if you're looking to career pivot, being able to pronounce people's names properly really is a sign of I see and hear and you're valuable to me. So thank you, Vimala, for being really clear about how to say it, because it matters, right? And what I would love to begin with, it's important to know where you've been in order to know where you're going. So in 5 minutes or less, could you tell our audience about your fabulous career to date?
Absolutely, Tamara. And thank you again for having me here. I was born in Malaysia, and I dreamed of being a TV star when I grew up. Now, this was before Instagram Live and YouTube. And my reality was that in a middle-class, ethnically Indian family, that was unconventional. So life takes different turns, as you well know, and the law found me. So I qualified as an attorney, and I came out to work as a litigator. I did commercial disputes. And I enjoyed it because it was cognitively interesting and I really threw myself in it. And after a couple of years, Tamara, I just felt that something was missing. And it was missing because, you know, by the time the disputes came to me, it felt like it was too late for me to really have an impact, to get a positive outcome. Now, the litigators out there might disagree with me, but that was my reality at that point. And I just wanted to make a difference earlier in the process. So an opportunity came up to pivot and go into an in-house counsel role. And for those who are not familiar with the legal field, it's actually quite different context and different, even though you're practicing law, it's practiced quite differently. So I took a role as an in-house counsel in a government-owned company in Malaysia. And then I didn't look back. I took another in-house role in a multinational company. And I worked around the world. I'm very grateful for the opportunities. And then, Tamara, the pandemic hit. It seems so long ago, but actually it was just over. I was in Europe alone. I was working and living in Europe. And because we were spending so much time with, you know, social distancing, I had a lot of time to think. And I realized that even though I mentored many lawyers, I haven't really talked about my stories and how it is to be an underrepresented woman in corporate. So I started reaching out then, you know, a lot of time, reaching out to my Black and Brown colleagues and talking about my experience as a woman of color in corporate. And the experiences were so familiar. And there was a red thread. which is like we felt like outsiders. And that really gave rise to my desire to empower other underrepresented women, and particularly underrepresented professional women, where we can really grow in our voices. So that part is not a pivot, it's an expansion. And I'm loving it, Tamara.
I'm so excited for you. And I think something that would be interesting for our audience to know, Vimala, is where you are now, because you've led us on a path from Malaysia. And I assume, did you go to law school in Malaysia or elsewhere?
I was in law school. It's a UK university. And
okay, and then you were in Europe. Were you UK based, or in what part of Europe?
I was working in the Netherlands. So to my Dutch friends out there, and I speak a little bit of Dutch. Kept getting stopped in the streets with people speaking Dutch to me, because unbeknownst to me before I went to the Netherlands, it's quite multicultural, and there are a lot of people from Suriname and a lot of people who look like me because they are ethnically Indian. So people kept coming up to me and speaking Dutch. So I decided to learn a little bit of Dutch. I understand better than I speak, but that was fun.
Excellent. So then after Netherlands, where to next? Because I know when we met, you were in Australia.
Yep. And still in Australia, still in Perth, Australia. It's nice and early in the morning here. And this is where I am currently practicing law and also doing my passion project, which is my executive coaching practice.
Well, and I would imagine, so I have spent time in Melbourne. I have not been to Perth, although I did work with an organization out of Perth for a few years. And I didn't see very many people of color at all. Mm. When I spent time in Australia, I always thought that my island in Canada was perhaps the most homogenous place in the world. And I was surprised when I got to Australia to discover that they were even more so. So was there a difference for you coming from Malaysia, which my understanding is quite multicultural, and then surprisingly, the Netherlands also, was it less so in Perth or equal?
That's a really interesting question. What I found is that there are pockets. You know, when people immigrate, they are traditionally drawn to where other people who look like them or were from their family circle or their neighborhood circle went. So there were pockets in the Netherlands, as it is in Perth, where you see a more cultural mix. For instance, I was in The Hague, and The Hague was more homogenous in the circles that I mixed in, the circles that I was traveling in. But I went for a conference in Amsterdam. It was much more colorful, literally. And it's the same as Perth. There are some neighborhoods and some circles that are more homogenous, and some neighborhoods that are really quite mixed. I think there's a better mix in the bigger cities. Well, not I think. There is a better mix in the bigger cities, Sydney and Melbourne, because people traditionally go there for jobs, Tamara. Yeah.
That makes so much sense. So thank you for sharing that. I really do think that the culture surrounding you, as well as your own experience, really forms and informs your career trajectory, which, as you said, it's interesting because you said it's not a pivot, it's an extension. And I think most of the time when it's by choice, that is the case, as long as your mindset is open to seeing it as an extension. And I love that your extension is actually helping. So that's one of the values that I've heard in our conversation so far, is that you have this deep desire to help others. Visiting your values across your career, sometimes a great way to spotlight them is by talking about a career high and a career low. So Do you have a high and low that you can share with our audience today?
Oh, this is juicy, Tamara. Shall we start with the low first? Is that okay? And then we end in a positive.
You're the first guest who's chosen to do the low first. So good on you.
So one time where I really experienced career lows was when I was battling self-doubt and imposter syndrome in my career. It was a daily reality to me, and it was highly unpleasant. I was frequently the only woman or the only underrepresented woman in the spaces that I was in for my work. And that was interesting in the sense that I would get comments and backhanded compliments. There was once where I remember this client of mine told me that, well, you know, you're non-compliant for an Asian. And I knew based on the context of the conversation, he was trying to be complimentary. It was a nod to my independent thinking and my confidence, but it really highlighted the stereotypes and some of the tropes that exist in corporate world. And I didn't say anything, and that's a real low for me. I was embarrassed. I didn't have the vocabulary to communicate or to self-advocate. And it felt as if I lost my voice. And that's why when I started my coaching practice, I set up a company called Mosaic Working. And it's a testament that, look, all our attributes, even those that we are embarrassed by. So, for instance, my lack of being able to speak up for myself. And for those who are listening, I just did the rabbit ears, the lack of being able to speak up for myself. That's all an important part of us. And we bring all of ourselves, no matter how broken we think we are, we own it and we bring that to the tables that we sit in. Because that's the beauty and that's the value that we bring. Yeah. So
That is such a beautiful thought. Thank you for sharing that. And just to like double click on this imposter syndrome that you were talking about, because you and I have talked about this before. Mm-hmm. And I want to clarify for our audience that imposter syndrome doesn't mean you don't have the skills or the talents to do your job. It often is that actually you're hitting it out of the park. You have top skills and talents, and perhaps you're the hardest worker, and you still feel like something is lacking. Like there's this feeling of, how did I get to be here? And I imagine that being a person who doesn't see themselves represented by the bosses, by the hiring team, would really contribute to that in a different way than for other populations who all still experience imposter syndrome. It's something that many of us are familiar with.
I think that's such a good point. I remember Jacinda Ardern, the ex leader of New Zealand, and talking about having imposter syndrome. And of course, everyone knew that she was hitting it out of the park, as you said. It's how you feel you're performing. And then you add to that the feeling of an outsider, the feeling that you're not represented. It's not even a feeling. You're actually not represented in the boardrooms or the leadership teams, and that brings a hyper vigilant. You're hyper aware of how you act, how you behave, and there's this term called that I learned actually rather recently, just in the past 5 years, called context switching. So, for instance, a lot of people of color change their accents on depending on who they speak to. Because we have this innate ability or the innate need to belong, so we twist ourselves like pretzels to fit in. And I'm not saying it's wrong to fit in. It is very damaging to try and fit in when you lose a part of yourself.
That I just do not understand how we haven't gotten better as a species at talking about this, because that difference between belonging, which is a basic need like food and water and shelter, we know this, that actually that grasp reflex that babies have is their first effort to belong someplace. And that stays mm-hmm. with us on a deep biological level across our lifetime. And so what you're describing to me is that hidden, and I loved how you said, but not really hidden at all. It's in plain sight that if you just look at a glance, somebody looks different. And it's going to take a long time for our culture to get the language. And I love that you shared some language that our audience can pick up. I'm working on it all of the time. And I constantly work with groups, organizations that I'm working with to say, who is not represented? Who is not noticed? Who would feel different, underrepresented, underappreciated? And listen to them, figure out how to let them lead, to let them show up in their comfort, because they shouldn't have to fit in. Everybody should feel like they belong. And it's usually on the bigger group that immediately sees a connection. They maybe have a shared accent or a shared look. Those people immediately have a different level of comfort that we just can't understand because we've not been in your shoes. I love that you've pointed that out. And just one more funny thing on imposter syndrome. I lead a working group for Harvard called the AI for Human Flourishing Group. And after our first meeting, I had 20 people reach out to me and say, that was fabulous, but I'm sure I don't belong in this group. And so we've now said that one of the defining factors to be in our group is that you need to have a sense of humility that stems from this imposter syndrome. No big egos fit in our space together. And so there is a flip side to that imposter syndrome, that it can be a good thing because it can show up as humility, but not when it's depleting your self-worth and contributing to negative. Anything else you want to say about that career low before we get to hear about your high?
I love the work that you do with leadership teams. I've been stalking you on LinkedIn, and really the questions that you ask, I think as leaders, are important. The anecdote that I gave just now about my client, I would like to think that in today's world where there's much more talk, there's much more discussion about how people feel excluded, I'd like to think that that term wouldn't come up. But I work with women every day that tells me that this is not the case. And the tone from the top is so important. What are the questions that you're asking? How are you as a leader showing others, being a guiding light, if you will? And people look at how you talk and how you show up. So just wanted to give a nod to the work that you're doing with leaders in that respect, Tamara.
Oh, thank you for that, Vimla. I appreciate it. And I love the work that I get to do with teams. I was actually on with a client in Malaysia this morning, who was one of the most open leaders. I didn't know that he was like the senior guy at the organization. And after we presented to him, he was so genuinely pleased and shared and listened and asked smart questions, and then said, you know, what would you do if you were me? And I said, you know, what you just did, keep doing that, because leaders need to model that they don't know everything, and asking questions. And I think that circles right back to what we were talking about, that sometimes just asking the question, because we don't always know the right thing to say, asking what is the right thing to say here? Could you help me? I don't know. It's the only way we're going to get better. And we do have a long way to go, and we've come a long way.
That is true. That is true.
All right, let's go to your high point. I want to hear the high point now.
That was a little, when we're recording, as we're recording this, it's International Women's Week, International Women's Day in Perth. So I wanted to share a story that highlights the wonderful women I work with. And I've been very fortunate. I've many highs from my legal career and many highs from my executive coaching career. But this is one lady that really I really remembered when I woke up today, Tamara. And that's, of course, I can't share personal details for confidentiality reasons, but she was made redundant. And she's always been a really good employee. So being redundant, especially if you're not expecting it, really can tear away your confidence. And you were talking about it, and if you talk about it in your show about career pivots, and this was a pivot that she didn't anticipate. And she was looking for jobs, and she was dreading it because she's really lost the confidence to communicate with people. It was imposter syndrome, in that she had the skills, but she felt that she didn't belong in the spaces that she was going. And I commend her for taking action. I stood a long time in my self-doubt and imposter syndrome, but this lady took action. She reached out to me. We highlighted her negative spiel. I heard a podcast recently where they talked about the, I think it was Jamie Lee. You have a not that good word on this podcast? You can.
Oh, yes. We are welcoming swears. Good.
It was the itty bitty shitty committee that you have in your head that keeps kicking you down. And this committee needs to be disbanded. So my client disbanded this committee. She went on, had a amazing interview. She knocked it out of the park, and she got the job. She's still in that company, and she's had, I think, multiple promotions. So whenever I feel down, I think about this client of mine, and it lights me up, Tamara. So that would be a definite high.
You light up when you talk about it. So I want to ask you, can you share with our audience how you helped her to squash that itty bitty shitty committee? I talk about your inner voice, and sometimes we see that you've got the little angel on one shoulder and the little devil on one shoulder. And the one voice is your positive voice that's helping to lift you up and doing the I think I can that we all read as children. The other one is saying mean things like why you and you can't. And I usually tell people the one that's mean isn't you, it's other people. And you grabbing the messages from the past, and you don't have to listen to other people. That's not your inner compass. That's not your inner voice. That's external. Just kick it to the curb. But what did you do with your client that helped her to silence the itty bitty shitty committee?
I actually remember you telling me that during our coaching sessions, the mean voice, the good voice, and the mean voice. And what we did, a couple of things, but the thing that I'd like to highlight today is really getting specific. So the itty bitty shitty committee has this tendency of catastrophizing. Oh, you're horrible, you're stupid, they're not going to accept you. And let's get really specific. Okay, what do you mean by you're horrible? Is there any evidence that you're horrible? Well, actually, I had delivered this project. I had saved X amount of money in this project. Oh, okay. Isn't that interesting? So, not that horrible after all. We then really paid attention to her body and her nervous system, because it was shot with all the stress she was going through. So we went through a process to release the stress and really calm the nervous system down. And lastly, we had an evidence journal. So this journal was quite specific. I believe in journaling generally, but this journal was quite specific to Mara, where every day she wrote something that she was proud of. And that was the evidence to keep the itty bitty shitty committee quiet. Because she's like, oh yeah, I'm horrible. Well, look at this. I did this on this a day. So that was the, I think that was
three. I love that. Those were three really strong strategies. And the last one especially speaks to me, because I'm a huge fan of gathering evidence to support your new belief. And especially when you're starting something new or reaching for something that you haven't done or been before, having that list of these are the reasons I can will help shut down that voice that says you can't. Or if you're on a hunt for a job, as opposed to creating a job and you're asking others to hire you, it helps you to stay resilient when you're not hearing anything. And I've heard from so many members of our audience who say, I've sent out 100 job applications with no response. And that's so common now that it's wonderful to have a tool like you suggested to help people keep going when it feels like this is really hard.
I'd just like to add to what you said about people who are looking for jobs and they hear crickets. And just to say, especially at this time, it's a bit of a marathon and you need a bit of a support system to keep you going. You know, like marathon runners, they have their support team to hand them nourishment and water. So please bring yourself into a community. And the act of physically writing, so I'm not talking about typing, physically writing down in your evidence journal really helps for that internal motivation, because there can be very hard times where your muscles are fatigued. Have faith in yourself and your abilities, and use the pen on your evidence journal.
So one of the things that we bring with us through all of these pivots are our strengths. And I love the VIA strengths, the values in action strengths. But there's lots of models out there. And I know you and I have talked about strengths, the VIA strengths, the Gallup strengths. What strengths do you bring, Vimala, with you on these career pivots that have helped you to navigate the harder times?
Tamara, that's such a great question. I feel that one of my strengths is to help people get results and empower people get the results they desire, whether it's in my legal career or in my coaching practice. And I'm really happy and I feel empowered when I help people reframe a situation from a negative to something that they feel that they can have agency and self-advocacy. That's where I'm happiest, and that's my strength, Tamara. I'm owning it.
I love that. And that's helping people to shift their mindsets. That's what I heard a little bit in there, because often we understand that our thinking pattern isn't working for us, but we don't understand what to do to change it. And so that really is a superpower in a coach to say, what if we reframe, like you said, or we think of it differently, or we silence this inner critic, then what would your world be like? So that is really a wonderful strength. Do you have a strength you would like to be able to use more? Something that you know. So when we started, you talked about way back in the day, you wanted to be an actress, I think you said, which many people would say lawyers are doing a lot of performing, depending on if you're actually in a courtroom or not. I've seen many people who swing from acting careers to either writing careers or performance. All of these things are similar. Coaching is much more relationship driven. So is there a strength, you know, something that you've got in your repertoire that you're not using as much as you would like to?
I think the strength that I would really like to lean into is communicating to a larger audience. And I think that's a skill in and of itself. So one-to-one is different. And I've done communication to larger audiences. I enjoy it. And I think it's important to sharpen that saw and get even better at that skill. Because I have this big dream, Tamara. I go to sleep at night, as corny as this sounds, I go to sleep at night thinking of it. I think of we all living in a just and equitable world. It might sound naive to some, but it's something that really drives me. And I feel like having empowered women stepping into their confident voices, it's not like pie. It's not that if you have a slice of pie, I have less. It's about, I've heard this analogy before, you know, how a rising tide rises all boats. It's about that, because when we are more empowered, when we get a chance to speak our truth and contribute in a way that's powerful for us as well as our companies, we create more opportunities. There's just more. So by the work that I'm doing with women and underrepresented women, I believe that everyone gets a chance to rise with the tide, and it's not about guarding the limited bits of pie that's left. So that's a long way of saying, yes, I'd like to really communicate my message to a larger audience.
Well, number one, I think everything you've said is beautiful, and I'm certainly going to be recommending you to the colleagues that I have in Australia. I know of a few people who are looking for keynotes and conversations, and so I'm certainly going to suggest, if my audience has listeners out there, reach out. That said, if I've got someone listening who's looking for coaching, are you taking clients right now?
I have my dancing list. It's a dance list. A dancing list is quite full, but I do have a few spots open. And if you'd like to see what working with me is like, please look me up on LinkedIn. I think my name will be there on the show notes, Tamara.
Absolutely. We'll make sure that all your details are linked so that everybody can find you. So I love to consider, in a year from now, if everything has gone right, all the seeds that you've planted have grown to their full beauty, what is a week in the life of Vimala going to look like? Is it going to be similar to what it is today? Is it going to be different? Give me an overview of what you'll be doing a year from now if everything's going well.
And I love this question because it's so expansive. And I would love for my perfect day. In fact, I do have a little one pager that I stuck on my wall that has my perfect day. And it has three things in it. Firstly, honoring my body and my mind. So I take time out for meditation and exercise. And I know you've spoken about meditation on this show and how important it is, Tamara. So honoring my body and my mind. Honoring my close relationships, and this is the relationship with my friends and family, and how that would look like is having beautiful conversations with them and honoring my work. So I will have either the one-to-one conversations with my clients, be it in legal practice or my coaching clients, as well as communicating to this wider group if possible. So there are 24 hours in a day. And I intend to squeeze the juice out of every minute, Tamara.
Oh, I can see you doing that, Vimala. And I know some people think that it just happens, but I've seen you work hard to have this happen. And so I don't want our audience to think, oh, you either are this kind of person or you're not. It requires energy and effort, and you've really put it out there. And so you reap what you sow, and I am so pleased that your work is turning out as well as it is. We're almost at the end of our time together, but I would love to check in and make sure there was nothing that you wanted to talk about that I didn't touch on.
No, Tamara, this has been such an enriching conversation for me. I'm going to take time to reflect on it as well. And I want to thank you again for giving me the opportunity and for your work in investing in women. You know, that's the theme of this year's International Women Day, Invest in Women. And we do that by either investing money in women or giving women opportunities, both of which are the same sides to a coin. So thank you for doing that. And I appreciate you.
Thank you so much. You brought to mind two thoughts. And so first off, I want to thank you because you brought it into my head that International Women's Day was this week. It's something I find in the post-COVID world, I almost feel like Groundhog Day, where is it Earth Day? Are we changing the clock? Like, it just keeps coming. And so it was not on my radar. And I'm super grateful you pointed it out, because I want to make sure that this episode comes out. I'm putting it out fast so that we get it out in time to really honor that you and I have come together from around the world, from different backgrounds, to celebrate the great things that women can do when they come together, and to hope that we inspire some other women to join forces, and again, to be that rising tide that lifts us all together. So thank you so much for bringing that to my focus. I have had an absolutely pleasurable conversation with you, and I'm just really grateful that you've spent this time with us, and I hope you'll come on again and we can talk more.
Let's talk more about peak performance, Tamara. That's a whole box we need to open.
That's right. We will have to come back for that. And on behalf of my audience, thank you for setting the stage and letting us have a little peek into your journey. And for the audience out there who's tuning in, remember that what's next is inevitable. Enjoying it is all up to you.